Welcome back to State of Affairs. I'm Robin Fisher sitting in for Julie Credence. We're spending the hour talking about anger and anger management. My guests are Dr. Bernie Carducci, Director of the Shyness Institute and Professor of Psychology at Indiana University Southeast, and Brayton Bowen, Head of the Howland Group, a Louisville consulting firm and host and co-producer of the public radio documentary series Anger in the Workplace. Do you live with or work with someone who has a problem with anger? How do you handle an angry situation? It's your turn to join the conversation now. Call 814-8255, that's 814-TALK, or toll free at 1-877-814-TALK. I'd like to go straight to the phones with Doug from Louisville, and he has a question about schools and anger. Doug?
My question is, do you feel like that in our post-Columbine age that schools are tightening down so much that we're maybe creating more problems and solving problems in terms of teaching kids how to cope with their anger and express their anger and learn how to express anger appropriately?
Good question.
There's a couple of things that need to be addressed there. And what you have focused on is the notion of people responding to anger, and these are the kinds of things that were responsible for what went on at Columbine. But there are so many other things that serve to underline that, things like a lack of frustration tolerance, a lack of tolerance for diversity, a lack of delay of gratification, the inability to solve problems. It's not enough to simply say, well, what we need to do is we need to teach people to control their anger. But you need to look at those kinds of factors that contribute to feelings of anger and frustration initially. For example, when you look at things like what happened at Columbine, the dynamics of that were simply social rejection and not being able to become part of a group. These were people who felt frustrated being rejected.
Right. What I'm asking, though, I think that teachers, especially in Jefferson County, have overreacted, and there's a real shutdown. And now that the lid is tighter, it seems to me, especially for boys, that teachers are much less tolerant. And instead of teaching children how to cope or teaching them, they give them a referral and send them to the principal's office or whatever, and there's no modeling and no instruction about the appropriate way to be angry. And there seems to be less tolerance. So children seem to not only be shut down, but they're not getting good role models from teachers and from school administrators.
Brayton?
I think our caller raises an excellent point, because what's happening in our school systems actually is suggestive of what will be continuing in the workforce as people graduate from schools and go on to the world of work. And his notion that there are no models, I think, is really very, very right on. It is the case that we do not have constructive models and training in terms of how to get what it is we want and need. As I have learned over the years that with respect to anger, it's usually the case that if Bernie said it earlier, if someone is fearful that they are going to lose something in their life, there's sort of a triadic formula of life, work, and play. And if any one of those elements in the triadic formula become threatened, it gives rise to anger. If there is no understanding in terms of how to express that anger and how to ask in a constructive way what it is that we are afraid of, mm-hmm. and what we want, then that becomes problematic. I do know, having talked to leadership in the Jefferson County school system, that safety is the number one concern on the part of many of the leaders. And education seems to be the number two. But constructive models of communication and also skills that help people understand how to facilitate and how to self-mediate, I think, are very important.
And there's quite a bit of research that would indicate that the instruction of social skills and conflict resolution decreases levels of hostility and violence in the schools. That research is already there. It's just finding the budget, finding the time mm-hmm. to implement these sorts of things. We have to think about, you know, what are our priorities going to be in the school? Do we think that social skills development, problem-solving ability, developing frustration tolerance, developing an appreciation for diversity, are those the kinds of things that we want to be taught in our schools? And Brett makes a good point. He says these are the kinds of things when we look down the pike, that's what we're going to see in the workplace. If people don't learn frustration tolerance, for example, delay of gratification, when they're 10, 12, 13, it's going to be much more difficult to see these sorts of things in the workplace and mm-hmm. resolve those in the workplace, where the stakes are much more costly, and as a result, creating much more levels of frustration and consequently violence. So all of this stuff is tied in together. And the point that you made earlier on the show, and that this is such a complex emotion and such a complex problem, that there is not going to be one simple solution to this. And by talking about it holistically, it is a way to really get at what the solution is going to be.
Thank you. Thank you for your call, Doug. Next, we're going to go to Rick from Louisville. Rick wants to know if the problem is specific to the U.S. Rick?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm just wondering if the anger and the frustration that we're seeing in our society is characteristic of, in other countries around the world, if this interpersonal anger between people is so commonplace as it is here, or has that even been looked at? When I think about fast food, I used to work in a fast food place, and immediate gratification. You come into Taco Bell, give me my food in 2 minutes, and if you don't have it, I'm going to cut your throat, pretty much. And that level of immediate gratification, is that characteristic of only here or also around the world like this?
One of the things that we are seeing is that as we transport our culture abroad, we're seeing much more the sort of type A personality, this type A culture that is so characteristic of the U.S. being manifested in other countries as well. There was a piece on public radio not too long ago talking about fast food in China, and mm-hmm. they said mm-hmm. one of the things that they noticed that for the first time in their culture, they are seeing overweight children as a manifestation of the kind of a characteristic of our particular culture. So we're going to see the kinds of things that we observed in our society. We're going to see these things in other cultures as well. So it's simply a matter of time. We are, in a sense, the psychological trendsetters for the world.
Is that scary for anybody else? Sure.
Well, it's not scary as long as we understand that we can recognize this and we know what to do about it so that we can implement these sorts of changes that are necessary before things get out of hand, so that we're not reacting. What we're doing is we're responding.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. And listeners, if you'd like to join our conversation today on anger and anger management, please give us a call at 814-8255. That's 814-TALK, or toll free at 1-877-814-TALK. Brayton?
Our previous caller raised a very interesting point in terms of instant gratification, and that certainly is a characteristic of the American culture. We want what we want when we want it. To paraphrase an old John Wayne film. And as I said earlier, we're becoming a nation of shouters and shooters. We do not corner the market in terms of crime, violence, anger, et cetera. But it's interesting, according to one report, that the United States leads the world in rates of murder, violent crime, juvenile crime, imprisonment, abortion, divorce, et cetera, et cetera. And while some people disagree with the findings of that particular report, more of that data holds up than not. So it is a commentary in terms of how excessive we have become in acting on the notion that we want what we want when we want it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brayton. And callers, if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 814-8255. That's 814-TALK, or toll-free 1-877-814-TALK. We're going to go to Pat now from Louisville, and Pat has a question. Actually, is life too complex? Good question, Pat.
I do think that, you know, sort of just a comment that sometimes, I think it's maybe the anger seems more prevalent in technological societies where people feel more alienated, anonymous, and even the very simple things are dominated so much by computers that, you know, like you have to fit into the computer scheme of things rather than the reverse. I think that creates a lot of frustration and, you know, and a lot of anger because you're going, well, this could run smoothly, you know, but it doesn't. And when you try to straighten out something, boy, that takes forever.
Does it? And does the complex life create unrealistic expectations, Bernie?
I think so too. Very much so.
One of the things that we're observing is that technology was supposed to give us more time,
right.
And what we're finding out is that it has just the opposite effect. People are working more and feel overworked now more than they ever have before, because now you can never be away from work. And the other thing is that she mentioned that things are getting more complex. Well, as we begin to get technology that allows us to multitask, to do many, many different kinds of things at a time, that becomes the level of expectation. So now people can drive, eat their breakfast, and talk at the cell phone at the very same time.
And check their email,
and then get upset when they're waiting at a red light because that prevents them from getting to work and starting to get at the tasks at hand. So we have to look at how things like technology have come to blend into our day-to-day sort of interaction. So it's not uncommon now to see people eating dinner in a very nice restaurant, talking on a cell phone while checking messages on their pager. Again, they're multitasking all the time. And that comes from a phenomenon that we call hyperculture. What's happening is our world is getting faster and faster and faster. We're demanding things at a much faster pace. The pace of life has picked up. And so people get used to that with their technology, then they carry that over to their interactions when they're waiting in the grocery line to get through. So now they expect everything to be as fast as it is on their computer as well. So it's part of a blending of our personality with technology.
Brighton?
I agree with what Bernie said. I have a slightly different perspective, and that is that in many ways the technology certainly is an enhancer. I'd hate to think of what I do today, trying to accomplish what I do today using the same tools and techniques of even 5 years ago. It certainly has enhanced. The other side of it, however, is that probably the negative aspect of the technological revolution is that it continues to dehumanize and depersonalize and disassociate us from one another. On the plus side, I communicate more in email and by telephone than I've ever done before, but I hate calling a telephone number and getting a myriad set of options in terms of voicemail purgatory, and boy, does my adrenaline go up in terms of how long I have to wait. And, of course, the message goes through me, and they're wasting my time. And the most frustrating part, of course, is coming to the end of the menu of the options, finding that none of the options that I really need is available.
And then you're angry.
So exactly. So the flip is that if we are trying to look for solutions in terms of how we minimize conflict and how we control anger, we've got to look at ways that are more respectful of one another's time and being, and that are more involving in terms of relationship. And again, it comes back to what are the five R's for engaging people in relationships, just like there are five R's for engaging people at work.
Okay. Thank you, Pat. And if you would like to join the conversation on anger and anger management, call us today at 814-8255. That's 814-TALK. Or toll free 1-877-814-TALK. Do you feel that you have an issue with anger? Are you angrier now than you used to be? Would you like to know how to handle that? Give us a call at 814-8255. That's 814-TALK. And now we're going to go to Brian from Louisville. And Brian wants to comment on the transference of anger from home to the workplace and back. Brian?
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I've always been a student of, I'm a student at U of L. Of anthropology and recreationally. I'm a student of sociology and psychology. I work with kids at the psych unit at Norton's, and it's pretty fascinating to see how much anger that these kids have. And also growing up in a family, a divorced family, I have experience with anger, and it took a lot of therapy to work out that anger. And I used to be very angry, but with therapy, I found ways to deal with it. So I noticed a lot of anger in these kids that I work with mm-hmm. at the hospital, and so it just seems like that whenever there's a discord in the family, that the kids, if they haven't dealt with it, they bring it to their adult life and they bring it to the rest of their life. And I just see the growing number of divorces and conflicts in the home, and I wonder if that just correlates completely with the amount of anger that we're seeing on the rise. And that's all I wanted to say.
Good question.
Well, again, when we see, for example, the kinds of issues that people have at their home, interpersonal issues that they have at home, are very similar to the interpersonal issues they're going to have at work. It's mm-hmm. just simply a different system, but the dynamics are very, very similar. The same thing in terms of, you know, on the playground as well. It's just a different a system, but the dynamics are very, very similar. So it makes sense that if you have problems at home, you're going to take these problems to work. You're going to take them in a dating relationship. You're going to take them in terms of your recreational relationship. You know, if you're angry at work, you're going to be angry when you're playing tennis, when you're driving your car, when you're shopping. And unless you deal with what is it that is making you angry, you're going to see generalizability in this. And as the problem increases, mm-hmm. what you're going to see is a greater sense of generalization of the maladaptive response, the anger, to a variety of other situations as well.
And I have a question actually related to Brian's question. We have a whole generation that is coming up and is growing up now that came from a society with a high divorce rate. And do you think that is leading to an increase in the anger? That they've never dealt with their anger, and it is essentially what you were just saying. But I suppose that connection just came to me when Brian asked that question. Is if we've got that whole generation now that's coming from a broken home or turmoil, and
it's not just the divorce, but it's a loss of negotiation skill. One of the things that we see in terms of the rate of divorce is people losing the ability to negotiate, to mm-hmm. resolve conflicts in their marriage, not being willing to take the time or to resolve these conflicts. So they're ending these things quicker because they're losing that their frustration tolerance is dropping, and so it becomes much easier to move away, to separate, to divorce, rather than trying to resolve the conflict. The analogy that I think of is when I was a kid. I'm 50 years old. When I was a kid, we played in the streets, we played on the playground, and mm-hmm. if there was a problem, we had to resolve it ourselves. So we learned conflict resolution, negotiation. If we were going to play, we had to figure that out. Now you have organized sports because people are so busy working that if there is a dispute, you have an official. So now people get used to having others negotiate for them. So we have become a very litigious society as well. So all these kinds of things sort of come together. There is no one cause. We can't say, you know, gee, it's due to divorce. It's not. There are dynamics within that mm-hmm. that manifest itself in many different ways and in many different situations. So I don't want to say that it's due to divorce.
Thank you, Bernie.
Thank you.
We need to take another quick break, and when we come back, more on anger and anger management.